This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is family law, and we're focusing on divorce, dissolution of marriage, the tracing and finding of community assets hidden by one spouse from the other. My guests are California State Bar Family Law Section members David Lederman, chair of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and Family Law Certified Specialist. His office is in Antioch. Alexandra O'Neill Muller, a partner in the La Jolla law firm of Glover and O'Neill. B.J. Fathom, Family Law Certified Specialist with law office in San Jose. Michelle Brown, Family Law Certified Specialist and partner in the San Diego law firm of Procopio, Corey Hargreaves, and Savage. And Michael Thompson, poor Michael, he's the only non-lawyer here. Congratulations, Michael. He is a forensic CPA with his office in San Jose. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And I want to thank you all for joining us. This is a very, very complicated area of hiding assets. It has a tendency to show that people are dishonest. And probably if it were me, I'd want to prosecute them, being a deputy DA, but I don't think that happens too often. In any event, if you would, David Lederman, would you tell us, what do we mean by hidden assets? What's that all mean?
Sure. A hidden asset is simply something that's not disclosed. Parties in a family law action, spouses, have a fiduciary duty to each other, good faith, fair dealing, to give each other information. As part of that process, the parties are required to provide each other with documents, what's called a declaration of disclosure. It lists out all of the assets and the debts. And if they don't disclose...
This is a written document.
This is a written document that they're required to do actually twice in a divorce, once at the beginning, once at the end.
I see.
To fully disclose to each other the assets so that they can look at each other across the table and rationally identify what the assets are and decide how they're going to divide it between them. If they don't have full information, they can't rationally and adequately divide the assets. So a hidden asset, for me at least, is anything that one party does not disclose to the other.
And we're talking about intentionally not disclosing.
Not necessarily.
Really?
Okay. Anything simply not disclosed is hidden. It's okay. Not part of that packet of information that they have to evaluate and divide.
So, all right, we have now the idea of what hidden assets are. Michael Thompson, forensic CPA, certified public accountant. What do we mean by tracing? What does that mean to you as the forensic CPA?
Well, tracing is going from one point chronologically to another to show where what happened transactionally. So what that means is, you get $100,000 from your grandmother and you put it in the bank account or commingle it. One of the ways to avoid all this kind of tracing is not to commingle that money, is to put it in a separate bank account. But you
wait a minute. I'm sorry, Mike.
Mike,
stop for a moment, if you would. When you say commingle, what do you mean by that? What does that mean?
Okay, in California, California is a community property state, which means that all of the money that was earned during marriage is barring a written exemption, all belongs to the community.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have money that's separate, then you need to be able to prove that it's separate, and the way that you do that is through tracing. You show, here's where the money went into the bank account. See, it stayed there the whole time. You do it on a monthly basis. See, the money's still there. Now it's the end of the marriage, and it's date of separation, and you say, see, the money's still there. I get my money back. Whereas if for some reason the bank account went down below, then the money's not still there. So you have to be able to establish that that's where the money is. Now, what we're talking about today, or the main topic, is hiding money. And the money that you're hiding may be community money, and your spouse is entitled to half of that. and you've moved it someplace where they don't know where it is. So the question is, how important is it that we know where it is, or do we just need to know that you moved it and it's not there anymore? And as long as there's enough money left over to divide it up, you just pretend that it's in another bank account somewhere, and then you add all the bank accounts together and divide by two. And that's how you take care of some of those kinds of things.
Well, let me throw a question. Let me throw a question to the attorneys here. I think most of us have, who are not family law attorneys, have heard of prenuptial agreements and postnuptial agreements. If you have a prenuptial agreement, how does that fit in this type of situation? Alexandra, would you respond to that?
Yes. Sometimes it's irrelevant. For instance, to the extent that you have an obligation to disclose assets, that's an obligation that exists whether you have a separate agreement or not. Once that divorce is filed, you're obligated to do a declaration of disclosure. And adding to what David said before, that's meant to be a complete disclosure. So you're meant to attach...
Including your own personal property, separate property that legitimately is yours?
Which you can identify as such. And so it has a spot to say, I believe this is community, I believe it's separate. And you're meant to back it up In a not particularly complicated way. If you believe you have a bank account with $5,000 in it, you can attach a statement showing that as close to when you separated as possible. So the existence of a premarital agreement doesn't affect the disclosure obligations. It might ultimately affect, and likely probably will if it's upheld, how the assets are ultimately divided. And so going along with that, I think separating them is not always a nefarious thing if you're accounting for the assets. I mean, I think as Mike said, if they're separated and you know where they are and they're separate property, it's kind of a no harm, no foul. Mm-hmm. If it's community property and you've accounted saying, all right, look, I put it from one bank account to B bank account, here it is, then you haven't hidden them. You've said where they are. It's when they kind of go missing that you've got hidden assets, or they haven't been disclosed at all, and then they get discovered that they're hidden at least at that point.
Let me throw this one to you, Michelle, if I may. What if, and again, I'm not a family law attorney, but it occurs to me that there is such a thing as a post-nuptial agreement, which means after people have gotten married, then they enter into some agreement with regard to what is mine, what is yours, what is ours, etc., and that may be referred to as a post-nuptial agreement. How does that fit within what we're talking about here, Michelle?
Well, just as Alexandra had mentioned to you with a prenuptial agreement, you have the same issues with a postnuptial agreement. That's a topic that we could probably spend hours talking about in and of itself. But, you know, in order for a postnuptial agreement or a transmutation agreement to be valid, you also need to have disclosures, because if you're going to enter into an agreement to dispose of assets, transferring community to separate or separate to community, you need to know what it is each spouse has and what you're gifting over to one or the other or transmuting. So you still have those disclosures. And again, as to follow up with Alexandra, just as in a prenup, when you have to do a disclosure and divorce, you do that with a postnup.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, one thing that I tell my clients all the time is there is no privacy in a divorce. You hear people say all the time, well, I don't have to give her that. I don't have to give him that. That's my separate property. There is no privacy in a divorce. She gets to see everything. He gets to see everything. And if you don't disclose and you don't show it to the other spouse, you can be liable for attorney fees and sanctions. And, you know, even if it is what you claim to be your separate property, because as Mike said, you have to prove it, right? Everything's presumed to be community, so you have to prove it's your separate property. And, you know, I had a quick question to throw out there for Mike, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, when we were talking about hidden assets and he was talking about the tracing, one of the ways that I tend to use forensic accountants a lot is when a spouse has a business that they each own. Let's say it's a restaurant, and there's a lot of money that's flowing through that. And that's a really good way that I find that the what we call the in-spouse can hide money. They can have money that it's disguised as expenditures, or they're skimming money off the top, and that money goes out, and then that money ends up in the bank account in Barbados or in China. And I often hire a forensic to assist me in that task because they're better at counting numbers and beans than I am. Mike, do you have any input on those issues, and have you been hired to help attorneys out in that manner?
I do, and I have. One of the things that I always consider when doing that kind of a tracing is, how long ago have you been starting to plan this divorce?
Because how many years have you been hiding money?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, if this is something sudden, and we use the term outspouse, and the outspouse is whoever is not running the restaurant. And, a lot of times they both run the restaurant or the store. There are all sorts of little tricks that analysis that you use to determine how much money is supposed to be there versus how much really is there. For instance, rule of thumb is one-third credit cards, one-third checks, one-third cash, or at least it used to be that way. And if you look at all the receipts and it's all credit cards and no cash, then you start looking someplace else. But what usually happens is that you siphon that money off, and frankly, when you're running cash businesses, that tends to happen even when both spouses are there. So what I usually do is ask the spouse that I'm working with, is this a common practice? Were you guys sucking money? And it's not even sucking money. What happens is that you get a cash business, you take the cash, you buy stuff with the cash. You take a look at, I had one client that had the kind of business where they dealt a lot in cash, where they collected it, but that's how they bought all their inventory.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a reasonable explanation for where the money went. Well, then if one spouse decides that it's time to put away a little nest egg, and it could be either one. It either could be, I'm sick of this relationship and I'm going to put away as much bank as I can, or I'm worried that I'm going to be left out in the cold, and so I need to tuck away a little bit just in case my spouse kicks me out of the house. So you could always look at that kind of stuff, but it's really a matter of where would you put this and why are you hiding it. And there used to be a bunch of money that we'd take home and split 50-50, and now that's not happening anymore. I wonder where that money went.
Let me throw this to all of you. If for example, a married couple decides they are going to get divorced, and one of the spouses believes that, if let's take the business situation, that the other spouse is hiding it, how does that spouse, your client, deal with something like this? You're the lawyer, BJ, and your client is saying, my husband, I'm pretty sure he's been hiding money, he's been stealing money, we deal in a lot of cash, and how do you as a lawyer deal with this?
It's pretty common, because unfortunately once the marriage breaks down, the trust in each other breaks down. And the first thing, I hear it from probably the majority of my clients, I know that there's more money. I know they're hiding this or whatever. And so that's where, as a lawyer, first, as David had indicated, we look at the disclosure. Sometimes the disclosure itself just doesn't look right. But other than that, what you want to do is, that's when the lawyer needs to step in and start to craft what we call discovery, requesting documents from the other side, requesting that they answer questions under penalty of perjury, sending subpoenas.
This is now a lawsuit.
This is
in the petition. Dissolution of marriage has been filed.
Right.
Okay.
And also, if I really start to see that there does appear to be something missing, that there may be a hidden asset, whether it's by mistake or intentional, I usually get a forensic accountant involved at that point and work with them because they will tell me, give me a list of I need these documents for the tracing. A lot of times, one of the other ways that these assets are hidden or diverted from the community is if there is a mistress or, you know, somebody on the side.
You mean you can't give money to your mistress?
Well, you can, but you're going to end up paying it back.
You can get in trouble for that. Huh?
Unfortunately, the spouse just doesn't look that kindly on it.
No, I wouldn't think so.
They don't like it.
Let me ask you this, and I know you're not tax attorneys. Although Mike is a certified CPA and would probably have a very good answer. In these situations where, let's say we take a business where a lot of cash is done and one of the owners of the business is pocketing the cash, trying to hide it from the other spouse, etc. Mike, let me throw this to you. And I don't want to make this into a tax program, but isn't that something that may well be in violation of IRS rules and possible prosecution if someone is doing that, hiding it from the spouse? It's also probably hiding it from declaring it in tax returns.
That is a true statement, that if you don't report all of your income, that's tax fraud. The irony is that usually, as I was saying before, if you have a pattern of doing this, you're not taking that money off the top just because you're getting a divorce. You've been doing it all along. It's just that you've been sharing with your partner, and now he or she knows that there's money that's out there that you're not reporting. Mm-hmm. And it's a couple of things. One, everybody thinks that they can call the IRS and get their ex-spouse in trouble, and I hate to tell you, that's not going to happen because the IRS is not generally interested in small stuff, and most of these cases are small stuff. The other is, you don't want to stand up in open court and admit that you've been sucking money out of this business along with your spouse, and now he or she is the only one doing it. So you got to be careful. We call those cases that are ripe for settlement.
Yeah, ripe for settlement.
But
okay.
But there are issues where it's truly it wasn't cash being skimmed off, or and I've had these cases where we did find an account that was skimmed off the top, unknown. And in those cases, as an attorney, one of the things we want to do is, if we have the innocent spouse, the out spouse, you want to get them to do an affidavit of innocent spouse regarding those tax periods so that they can protect themselves from any possible tax liability.
Really? Oh.
Absolutely, because they were completely unaware of that income and they filed joint taxes.
That's very interesting. Let me let all of you know, we're doing this program live on May 31st. In a few minutes, I'm going to give you or invite you to call in with your questions, your comments, if you're listening to the full hour, live hour. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255, if you'd like to call in. One of the things I want to let you know is, although we are focusing on hidden assets, we're focusing on tracing, we haven't even talked about reverse tracing yet, certainly my guests will be willing to respond to questions that you may have in the family law area that maybe aren't even into the hidden assets, the tracing of assets. So keep that in mind. And for those of you who may have tuned in a little bit late, let me tell you who my guests are. Michael Thompson is a forensic CPA. His office is in San Jose. My other guests are attorneys. We've got from San Diego, we've got Michelle Brown, who's a certified law specialist in family law. We have here in the studio with me B.J. Fatum. He is also a certified specialist in family law. We have Alexandra O'Neill Miller, whose office is in La Jolla. And we have the chair of the family law, actually the executive committee of the family law section, David Lederman, who's also a certified specialist in family law. So those are the guests I have. They're pretty powerful people. So feel if you have questions to call in. Where do we go from here once that Mike, let me ask you this. Before we went on the air, we talked about something called reverse tracing. What does that mean, and how do you deal with that?
Well, reverse tracing is, I think the definition would be something where you know it's out there, but you don't know where it is or how it got there. Or, well, you know how it got there, you just don't know where it actually is. And sometimes with my clients, I just say, I don't really care where it is. This is a burden of proof kind of thing. As long as we shift the burden of proof to the other spouse and say, we know you took it, we don't really care where you put it, it's just we're still going to include it as part of the assets to be divided, then I don't have to show the use of the funds or the use of the money or whether it's still there or not. The only problem with that is that if this happened a long time ago and the money got invested or should have been invested, it's much more difficult to say, well, you know, there was $1 million that disappeared 10 years ago, and at your average interest rate, that would have been, you know, $1.4 million or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can get your money back, but getting the return on that would be problematic.
Very difficult.
But, a lot of times people come in and they say, oh, you need to trace these funds for me. And I say, yeah, it may not be as complicated as you think.
So in other words, from what you've all said so far, as I understand this, if before a couple got married, he or she under California law had inherited, let's say, for the sake of argument, $500,000 from one's parents. That's separate property. Are you saying that after these people get married and now they decide they want to get divorced, that they have to in this declaration of disclosure, that they have to say and show and trace that this is my separate property? I got this from my father when he or she, or my mother or father when he or she died. David, excuse me.
You don't need to have that detailed of an explanation and declaration of disclosure, but you need to identify the asset. This is it. One of the themes that you've heard from Alex, from BJ, from me, is that the rules of the game between spouses is full disclosure. You need to say what it is and identify it as separate property. You can offer the proof later, but the declaration of disclosure doesn't need to have that. We need to identify the asset.
I see.
We need to know what the assets are. What are the topics of discussion?
Mm-hmm. So,
where the tracing comes in, though, Chuck, and this is what Mike was talking about, is if for some reason you took that separate property, that inheritance, and you put it into a joint account, or sometimes they'll use it and put it as a down payment on a house or something to that effect, and you receive that during the marriage, it's then your burden. Mm-hmm. To trace mm-hmm. it out to show that the source was from separate funds.
Mm-hmm.
But and that's not necessarily particularly a hidden asset.
I see. Yeah,
but
David.
The disclosure still requires the identification of the asset. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about is, again, laying the cards on the table so that we can effectively look at what exists inside, what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
If the issue
of hidden, privacy in divorce.
Right. The issue of hidden asset happens when you take one of those playing cards and you stick it in your back pocket, mm-hmm. or you drop on the floor on the way to the table.
Yeah.
That's the hidden assets we're talking about. Everything else, the rule is full disclosure.
So like Michelle said, there's no privacy in divorce. Yeah. That means even though we're in no-fault state and the court doesn't care about affairs, if in fact, though, a lot of community assets were put into an account with your mistress or so forth, as Michelle said, you have no privacy. Guess what's going to be in the middle of the court?
Does the mistress become a party to the lawsuit?
Could be certain cases where I've had cases where houses were purchased under the mistress's name, and it was clearly purchased with community assets. We've had to join the mistress into the case because they put it under her name, and now that's a community asset that has to be determined.
Michelle, let me ask you. I know you wanted to say something. Have you had a case like this where the mistress became essentially a party to the case?
Yeah, just like BJ had said, I had a $20 million mistress.
Ooh. Where is she? So where is she now?
Well, she was a party to a lawsuit. As BJ said, that's interestingly enough, quite a common thing that happens is putting assets or cash or property into the mistress's name or in her possession, you know, assuming that the wife is not going to find out about it. And I wanted to jump on something that BJ had said earlier about discovery. And, you know, one of the ways that I have been able to discover accounts offshore in Barbados is if I can get a copy of a passport, I try to do that. Mm. And I always ask for plane tickets, credit card statements. I want to see where the person is flying. That gives me an idea. I've had to hire counsel in Barbados and was able to, like, repatriate over $1 million of hidden cash. And as the fiduciary duty statutes will tell you, that can then be given 100% to my client if the other spouse hid it. So that's another thing to look at is, you know, where are these people flying? Gee, he or she has never gone to China, and all of a sudden they're making a lot of trips to China. You know, just things to consider. That's what BJ, when he was saying we do discovery, we look at all these little nuances and try to figure out where the money or the asset could be hidden if our client tells us they think that there is a hidden asset or money.
Briefly, what happened to the girlfriend with the $20 million? How much of that was she able to keep?
Not much. There were some issues. Let's put it that there's a reason that a lot of people go to private judging, and you addressed some of that with Michael, so I'll leave it at that.
We are just about at the end of the statewide version of the program, which is half an hour, which is distributed to other stations. And so we'll get to Michael on this in just a moment. And for those of you who are listening to the live program, stay with us. I will give you our toll-free number in just about a few seconds. All right, everybody, here is the toll-free number in case you'd like to call in with your question, your comment, whatever it is, whether it's on hidden assets or tracing of assets or some other area of family law that you'd like to pose to my guests. The toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco, and if you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, here's the number, 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. That number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. Most counties in California have a lawyer referral service in conjunction with the Bar Association. You can call your own. With minor exception, for half an hour consultation, you will pay somewhere between $25 to $35 for that half an hour consultation with an attorney. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep it going. It's a great way to get some basic information if you're having a problem, and I highly recommend it to you if you are having a problem or anticipate a problem. I want to give you the Bar Association website for the certified specialists. If you're looking for a certified specialist, that's www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to the upper left-hand corner of your screen for legal specialists. For the National Board of Trial Advocacy, if you're looking for one of its specialties and one of its lawyers, that number is 866-384-6565 or www.nbtalawyers.org. And additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. So again, I urge you, if you do have some questions, some comments that you'd like to pose to my guests, The toll-free number, 866-798-8255. And David Lederman, I think Michelle wanted you to respond to something. Do you remember what she wanted you to respond to?
No, what am I responding to?
But, Michelle, I think you threw the ball to David. What was that for? Michelle?
Oh, gosh, I'm trying to remember.
Oh, my gosh. We're all taking a senior moment here. Wait a minute. Let's do this. While everybody's trying to remember what's going on, we have Nona. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure, go ahead.
So my partner divorced with his wife, and he was illiterate at the time, and she got her daughter to file, to have him sign papers, so he gave up all of his custody without realizing it. He gave also the whole house to her, and he didn't take anything. And he's not even trying to change that part, but she won't let him see the kids unless he gives her money. And he was giving her money for a while, and he was giving it to her instead of to child support. And so he got delinquent on child support, and like I said, didn't read and just let a lot of that stuff go.
When you say he was illiterate, was that because he was too lazy to read things, or he had a difficulty reading?
He had a learning disability.
He did, okay.
Yeah, so when we got together, I taught him how to read.
Oh, good. So how long ago is it?
Well, this has been going on for maybe 4 or 5 years,
yeah.
And so now he owes, I mean, he's paying into child support now, but he owes back, I think he owes like $20,000 in back fees, and then also another $20,000 in interest.
Now your partner, though.
We're not married.
Okay, your partner, though. He has not seen an attorney on this?
He hasn't seen an attorney yet. The part of the problem is he doesn't want to get her in trouble, because I think she was lying that he wasn't giving her anything, but he was. And so she was getting money. So he's like, I can't screw over my kid's mother, but I want to be able to see my kids. And so the separate issue is how do I mean, he's got a whole separate thing on.
Okay, let me do this. No, let me suggest this. And then my guests, I'm sure, will want to have some response to your question and your comments.
Thank you.
As someone who is a consumer advocate, which I am, I have been a deputy DA for San Mateo County in consumer protection. It's now 33 years. I feel what your partner should do, just so that he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And I presume you live in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, but the situation is not in San Francisco.
No, that's all right. That's all right. And your partner lives with you in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Okay. I suggest that you might want to suggest to your partner, just so that he begins to educate himself on what might be available to him in terms of, he seems to be overly generous to his former wife in terms of what's been going on here. I think he should contact lawyer referral for the San Francisco Bar and have a half an hour consultation with a family law attorney, pay $25 or $35. And let me give you the phone number again. I think it's a way to start. 415-989.
Do you think that matters, even though, because I talked to somebody very briefly, I think, there before, and they said that we had to get someone in the county that she's in.
Well, that may be the case, but I'd like for your client, for your partner, to get some education in this by starting to speak to a lawyer who's a family lawyer, who can give your partner some ideas of what to do. So here, jot down this number. And everybody, when you're listening to this program, I highly suggest that you have a pen or pencil and paper to write down some numbers, because this is important stuff that may be valuable to you or someone you know. 415-989-1616. 415-989-1616. I'm going to try to get some answers for you, Nona, at this point. So if you'll take their answers, turn your radio back up, and hopefully we'll have something for you. Thank you
Great,
for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Try to urge your partner to do this. Any one of you have some? Yeah, BJ, if you would.
Well, it's two different questions, and it's two different issues.
Of course.
With regard to the child support, my first question would be, did he pay in cash? I mean, if he's at least got some canceled checks or if he transferred money or some proof that he made some payments directly to her, he could probably use that as some proof to offset on the child support. And then regarding custody and visitation, the court maintains jurisdiction over custody and visitation until the children turn 18. He can always go into court to request a modification. I don't know what she means by signed off.
Right.
Alex seems to
Alexander,
that's kind of what I wanted to address.
Yeah, please.
The three of us at least know that there's really no stipulating or agreeing to terminating parental rights. So you're not severing a parent-child relationship by agreement in that way that she mentioned. So the good news out of all of that, even though there's been what seems to be about a 4 or 5 year time lapse, is that he has the ability to file a motion to have time with the child or children. Mm-hmm. He has the ability to go to mediation, undoubtedly for free, with her to try to work something out.
That's mediation through the court.
Right, back into the child or children's lives. That the same time problem, though, is not going to apply in all likeliness to signing away assets, because eventually there is a statute of limitations
with regard to assets. Yeah.
But it sounds like his focus is her support and custody, and it sounds like getting an education, as you suggested, Chuck, from an attorney would be helpful, and then thinking about being proactive so that more time doesn't lapse in the time that he can see his kids.
And Nona, one of the things I want to mention to you that you can suggest to your partner is that most counties, and I think San Francisco, pretty sure it has, a family law facilitator's office. And that is something where your partner can go to the courthouse for the family law facilitator's office. You can look it up on the San Francisco County Bar San Francisco County website for the family court and the family law facilitator's office, and he can go in and speak to one of the attorneys there and get some ideas with respect to the custody, child visitation, etc. So your partner, although he sounds like a really, really good guy, frankly, I feel much too generous. There are things that he should be doing for his own protection, for his relationship with his kids, and these are a couple of things that we wanted you to try to pass on to him. Also, for those of you, I want to, before we take another, oh, she's back on the line, a follow-up question. Nona, we'll get back to you in just a minute with a follow-up question. For those of you who haven't even called yet, I want to give you a chance when we get finished with Nona. That toll-free number, 866-798-8255. For those of you in the San Mateo County area, on Wednesday, June 14th, that's 2 weeks, let me see, what is it? I think it's 2 weeks from now. At noon, the San Mateo County Law Library will have a free lecture entitled Estate Planning 101, Learn the Basics of Estate Planning. Again, this will be on June 14th at noon, and it'll be a presentation by attorney Nicole Warmerdam, Warmerdam, who's also a board-certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. You are invited, whether you're in San Mateo County, anywhere in the Bay Area, you're invited to attend this free lecture at the Law Library at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City. It's across the street from the Hall of Justice. If you'd like some more information on this, the Law Library phone number is 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913, or visit the website www.smclawlibrary.org. And we have Nona is back again. Nona, what's the other question, dear?
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
So my question is that he did most of his payments in cash to her, and I was thinking that he could get some of it from having put money into her bank account, so he could subpoena the records from his old bank account. But the other part of it that's confusing, I think, is that does he have the ability to make a deal with the child support services with a lawyer later and maybe get some of that taken down, because that's a stupefying amount of money for him?
Boy, that's a loaded, very powerful question. If you turn your radio back up,
sir.
Nona, let me get some comments. David, do you have some comments for Nona on this one, this last point?
Yeah. In the past, it was actually fairly easy to reach agreements with DCSS. There are now more restrictions on doing that. But they tend to be fairly user-friendly in trying to find a way to make things work. They can work out interest payments. They can work out payments. One of the questions that I haven't heard answered, or one of the questions I have, is whether or not the support arrearages, the amount of support that's owed back was for aid. Was this an aid case? And that is, was the mother receiving financial aid from the county?
If
she was, there's a lot more restrictions on our abilities to negotiate with DCSS, because if...
Now, when you do the initials, what is this again?
DCSS, Department of Child Support Services.
Yeah, so which is a part of all most counties.
Right.
Have this.
Right. DCSS exists for the purpose of setting and collecting child support.
Yeah.
But if you're receiving state aid or county aid, they actually get the money back. Right. There'll be a pass through amount of $50 that would go to the parent. But most of it's going back to pay the county for aid given to the parent. So if that's the case, there might not be a whole lot to do. If it wasn't an aid case, then there'd be a lot more flexibility.
Michelle, do you have any thoughts on this?
Oh, David's absolutely correct on that. If the money also, the child support belongs to the mom in this case, mom has the ability to agree to a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Department of Child Support Services is collecting the money from dad, if it's a non-aid case, mom could agree to just compromise the arrears. You know, I agree with your comment that, you know, dad's being too generous. I mean, he needs to think about the fact that if it's a non-aid case, mom probably initiated the case. If it is an aid case, then, as David said, it's really at the child support services as to whether they would agree to compromise any amounts owed.
I hope, Nona, what you do is you try to persuade your partner to actually seek some basic legal advice, because it's very important that he do this. And there are, you know, at this point, some low-level, small-fee things through either lawyer referral or no fee if you go to the family law facilitator's office to get some information. Alexandra, do you have some further comments with respect to Nona's concerns here?
No, just a brief one, which is that... where there's often a compromise, even when you have child support being paid back to a county to cover public assistance, it's in the amount of the payment on the back support or the arrearages.
Mm-hmm.
And so the counties are often willing to lower payments so they can be made rather than having them rack up. The interest is a fixed amount of 10%. And
that's
so
statewide,
it's high interest.
Yeah.
And so it keeps going.
Yeah.
There aren't many exceptions to that. So it's important to try to negotiate something that has a hope of bringing it down a little bit.
Yeah. All right. David, please.
My parting comment on that, as well as what he should understand, is that support doesn't go away. If support is owed, it's due until it's collected. There's cases that
even if you file for bankruptcy, does that stay? It stays there.
It stays.
You cannot discharge it,
and your estate can pay for it. So it doesn't
go
away.
So even if you die,
until essentially, it's essentially due until paid. So he really should address it somehow.
BJ, any further comments?
No, I mean, I would parrot what they were saying. One of the things, as David said, if it's not an aid case where it's a reimbursement to aid, and it's up to her to negotiate with regard to the arrears, maybe bringing whatever proof he has of the prior payments and discussing it would assist in convincing her that it might be a good idea to settle. So if it was in cash, if he can show maybe points of sale out of his bank statement on the same day that there's a deposit for the exact amount matching in hers. How he did it, he took cash out of his and put it into
hers. So you're taking the bank statements of both him and her, and you're comparing them.
Right. And at least, you know, maybe that would be some effect with her. As David and Michelle said, that if it's not an aid case, she started the Department of Child Support Services case. She's the one that said, he owes me all this money.
Yeah.
And so maybe when she's confronted that there may be some evidence that, because they have to sign that under penalty of perjury when they are putting out the financial statement, it might be convincing to open up some discussion saying, well, maybe it isn't exactly what you thought it was. Maybe there's some money that was paid during this time that maybe you forgot.
Yeah. You forgot when you got that cash.
Right.
That,
you forgot
my goodness,
about it.
That cash just disappeared.
Right.
Just disappeared.
Right. I get that a lot I've had people say, I forgot about that $150,000 account.
What is it? There's a great phrase, money is the root of all evil. Do you think that's true?
It is certainly a driving force in divorce cases. It's usually the cause of the divorce the cause of the conflict throughout the divorce.
Oh, my. Never a dull moment, everybody, right? Okay, here's our toll-free number, and we're going to get to Alexandra back in a moment. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. This is your Legal Rights. We're doing a program on family law. If you have questions on family law, whether it relates to the first half hour that we've been doing, which is on hiding assets and tracing them and finding them, et cetera, if you have other questions, other comments, other concerns, join us. We still have a few minutes of the program. Don't wait till the last couple of minutes because then we're gone. Alexandra, please.
Just as a general caveat to everyone that's listening, when it comes to family law issues, don't deal in cash. There's no record, it's not insured, and it's almost impossible to prove. It's very difficult. Forensic accountants notwithstanding, whether it's paying your support or it's giving payments to the other side as an equalization for dividing assets, doing that often results in a lot of attorney's fees and litigation trying to undo something with very little evidence. Even if the person handed over lots of cash, they may not get it back. And so checks are a lot easier to trace, a lot easier to prove, and a lot more of a written record.
Mike, do you have any comments in this area?
I have a couple.
Okay,
number one, I think Nona is thinking in the right direction, and BJ said it, that if you can see the money going into a bank account and mom doesn't have any other explanation for where that money came from, and you do have an explanation for where it came from, the judge is going to be more inclined to agree that might be where the source of the funds. And my other comment is that in the forensic accounting world, we have a motto that if it's not on a piece of paper, it never happened.
Attorneys have the same thing. The agreement is only worth the paper it's written on.
Mike, let me ask you this. With respect to, I think this goes back with what Nona was saying several years ago when her partner was making these payments for child support in cash. How long, generally speaking, can one expect that you can, by way of a legal process, a subpoena for discovery or whatever, that banks keep the copies, whether it's in their computer or whatever, of bank statements?
Yeah. For 7 years.
How much?
Seven.
Seven. 7 years.
If it's past 7 years,
They're gone.
Not a problem. And in fact, that's one of the issues with regard to tracing is that you can. I had one client who had $1 million in real estate before he got married, and then there was a 10-year gap that he had no records, and at the end of the 10 years, he had $1 million in cash and no real estate. And the opposing attorney said, we don't know that that's his separate money. Mm-hmm. He may have sold all of it or spent all of his separate money and made $1 million in community money. So that's problematic in a situation like that. But 7 years, if you want to go back farther than it, and sometimes that's that's really a problem, because it will get a 10-year marriage, a 9-year marriage, where everybody's got, agrees as to what they had at date of marriage, but then there's that short period of time, and then it picks up again at the 7-year mark, mm-hmm. and say, well, look, you know, we had this money 10 years ago, and we had this money 7 years ago, and we made reference to it, but there's a lot of amnesia that goes on in divorcing people.
Intentional amnesia. Is that what you're saying, Mike?
Well, yeah, it's a matter of, you know, I'm not really sure what happened here, and my attorney tells me that it's your burden to prove this, and so I'm going to let you give it your best shot, and we'll see how it goes.
Mm. Well, and what,
kind of,
go ahead, Michelle.
Go ahead, Michelle,
sorry,
please.
I was just going to say, to follow on with Alex and her practice pointer, is that if you have separate property coming into the marriage, or if you inherit into the marriage, frankly, if you just have separate property and you want to be able to maintain that as your separate property, you need to make sure you keep the documentation.
Yeah.
If you don't want to be a hoarder, you can scan it, save it. But if you don't have the documentation, as Mike said, you have the burden of proof. You're not likely going to win.
Yeah. Very good point. Very good point.
So the other thing that Mike had brought up, that you can only get banked statements back 7 years.
Yes.
So, for example, and I've had these cases where there has been a pattern of skimming during the marriage for more than 7 years, and has been put into other hidden or non-disclosed accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some of these cases where we were only able to go back the 7 years, but by trying to establish the pattern. And Mike can answer this more, but it seemed to have been a pattern of at least an average amount of money per year, and we could at least get, even though we couldn't get all the records when we've actually found the bank account it was going into, we knew when it was originated. And the forensic accountant can kind of fill in that pattern to give a good estimate to the court, well, it looks like X amount of dollars from the community has been skimmed over this period of time, because we know the account was open on this date, and we know the pattern at least for the last 7 years.
So are you saying, BJ, with that, then, if you can show a pattern and you believe the skimming has gone beyond 7 years, that you can use that pattern to show that actually more money was skimmed beyond the 7 years? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and I did that in a case with a forensic CPA.
Did you?
Yeah, we were able to obtain the start of the account that we found that was not disclosed. It was a fraudulent account open, and the money had been skimmed for a period of time.
Wow. Mike, any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, if you can find the account where the money's going to, then that helps quite a bit. And then, as with all things in the law, you piece all the pieces together. I tease that I don't do Sudoku, because that's what I do for a living, is I take all these little pieces and try to match them together and make a puzzle out of it. And if there's some pieces missing, you still got a fair idea of what probably happened, and you do a presentation in front of a judge, and you keep your fingers crossed, and sometimes you win and sometimes you don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, coming back to Nona for a moment, in terms of her concerns and her partner situation, Nona, I think I hope you if your partner's not listening to this program, you can hear it. There's a free podcast that this program is available to you or anyone, the full hour. And so all you do is you go to www.kalw.org/subscribe, SUBSCRIBE. So I suggest that you might want to have your partner listen to the program, or you go to the website for KLW, www.kalw.org, and look for Your Legal Rights. It'll be on the website tomorrow that you can listen to it live. And have him do that, because he really needs to get going. Before we get down to nearly ending the program, in case you're wondering who my guests have been, and I've told you who they were before, But let me do it again, because I think this is the first time I've had five guests on the program in a long, long time. I want to let you know who they are. Michael Thompson is a forensic CPA. His office is in San Jose. Michelle Brown is in San Diego. She's a family law certified specialist partner in the San Diego law firm of Procopio, Corey Hargreaves, and Savage. You have how many lawyers in your firm, Michelle?
About 150.
Just a little tiny firm, obviously.
A little one.
No, just a little teeny one. We have Alexandra O'Neill Muller. She's a partner in the La Jolla law firm of Glover and O'Neill. And we have, of course, B.J. Fadum, who has been a tremendous help to me on this program by both being a guest on the program and helping me line up topics and guests. He's a certified specialist in family law. His office is in San Jose. And finally, last but certainly not least, is David Lederman. He is chair of the executive committee of the family law section of the State Bar. He's also a certified specialist in family law. His office is in Antioch. And so, Michelle, you're down there. Final 30 seconds. What comments do you have for our guests? Our listeners?
Well, if we're in the topic of the hidden assets and the tracing, just remember that the best way to get through a family law dissolution of marriage action is to be open and honest and fair. And if you fully disclose, you're going to save on your attorney fees, and time takes a toll on your life. So just disclose your assets, get two good attorneys, divide them, and be able to move on with your life.
Well, that's very sage advice. Dave, what do you have to say?
I actually agree with Michelle 100%. I think the rule of the game is disclosure. You need to lay the cards on the table. Both parties need to understand what's at stake. And to the extent that either party is just not genuine about disclosures, it is costly, it's expensive, it's painful. So in short, I concur with
Michelle. Yeah, it can be very expensive if you have any money, and that's not the way to do it. BJ, very quickly, anything?
The same, because the consequences could be that you lose the entire asset that you're trying to hide. It's not worth it.
And Alexandra?
And you spent a marriage sharing bed sheets and bath towels, and so bank accounts get disclosed. They're not private either, and so there needs to be a lack of a position that's the case. They need to just be open.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program. The three of you, BJ, David, Alexandra, and Michelle, and Michael, thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. It's been a pleasure having you. I think because of the complexity of this, I will invite you to come back at some time in the next couple of months or so, because I think there are other issues we want to deal with. Next time on Your Legal Rights, our topic is discrimination in the workplace and how the state of California deals with it. My guests are Chaya Mandelbaum and Joseph Ortiz, members of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. And Mr. Mandelbaum is also the chair of the California Fair Employment and Housing Council. So I hope you join us for that. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. Thanks for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and I hope you join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney. Uh-huh.